Blog Talk Radio.
Broke about McDonald's temporary workers with J-1 visas
at franchisee locations in Pennsylvania who worked under similar conditions. According to a report by Centro de los Derechos del Migrante, workers who come to the United States for temporary jobs under the H-2 visa program widely report similar problems from a wide array of employers. The H-2 visa program has a number of flaws that unscrupulous employers and recruiters regularly exploit. Among the key problems, despite the fact that recruitment fees are illegal in both Mexico and the United States, it is standard for recruiters to charge workers an average of $590 for travel, visa, and recruitment costs, and rarely are these fees reimbursed. More than half of all migrant workers report paying these fees. The terms of employment include wages, work, and living conditions, are often misrepresented by the recruiters. More than half of the workers surveyed did not receive a copy of their job contract. Because the H-2 visa process is so complicated, it totally lacks in transparency and is difficult for complaints to be filed or enforced. One out of every 10 workers reported paying a recruitment fee for a job that didn't even exist. Migrant workers have scant information about their rights and are at increased risk of being abused or defrauded. Government oversight over the recruitment process is very weak. Many workers go into debt in order to pay their recruitment fees. They often have to take out loans with high interest rates and have to use their homes as collateral. Such loans can be used to force workers into forced labor, debt servitude, or human trafficking. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights also found widespread evidence that migrant workers who come to the United States are systematically exploited by American employers. Nice people.
Wow.
They should be ashamed.
Yeah.
They only care about money.
I think we read that story a couple weeks ago about the McDonald's story.
Mm-hmm.
The franchisee had brought it. But anyway,
let's go back.
Let's move on to another story. We're working with a computer here, so we must move back and forth and back and forth and so on. So, let's see. My next article is, oh my God. I'm sorry.
I don't know what you're doing.
Well, it just blew up. Sorry, folks. Just my page was just blew up here. So went back. Hang on one second. Technical difficulty.
Jobs based because of the greed of CEO David Berg and the company's board members.
Luckily, the North Dakota Supreme Court ruled recently that workers were entitled to receive unemployment benefits under state law, and this has been a lifeline for American crystal sugar workers. But if politicians in Bismarck get their way, workers who are locked out in the future from their jobs through no fault of their own may be denied unemployment benefits. They could cut these benefits as soon as today. As it says, tell your senator not to kick workers while they're down and to oppose any amendment or legislation that would cut unemployment benefits for North Dakota workers. Extremists in Bismarck want to ignore the state Supreme Court ruling and change state law to stop workers from receiving the benefits they've earned for their years of service. And this is a direct assault on North Dakota's working families, and it needs to stop. If you want to do this, if you want to send a message to them, the state senator, if you live in North Dakota,
just go to this website.
Go to this website, AFL-CIO. Go.AFL-CIO.org. All right? And check it out.
There's a little audio here.
Talks about this. Since August 1st, 2011, 1,300 American sugar workers.
It's hard because my dad has worked so hard, and so has my mom. And just to see somebody be this uncaring about the families, it's really heartbreaking.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Gaddis, I wanted to write this letter to you to let you know what you guys have done to the other families and tell you how all of you affected every one of their lives. All because of you, I can't really get a good education or even be able to play any sports. I'm lucky that I even get to school lunch. I hope you know how selfish you are. I sure will raise my kids better than that, and they will know how to respect others unlike you. Just maybe you should walk in my shoes and know how it feels to afford less than you usually can. I just want them to understand that I want my dad's job back because I might have to get a new job and help pay for the family.
It's been really hard for our family. I wrote in my letter that I hope we get to pay the bills, make sure we keep our house, make sure that our dogs are healthy, and we got food.
Our dad had to take a loan out of his 401k before so we could pay it for the next 6 months, and then after that he didn't know what he could do. Us kids kind of had to help him provide for each other. It made him feel like he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing as a father. It's not something that we like to see him as.
It's hard to go to sleep at night having to listen to your parents down the hall screaming at each other about it.
I'm only 11 years old, and I worry about those things because, well, you just think about it, and thinking about it gets you scared, and you want to help, but you can't do nothing.
The union is a lot stronger than Dave Berg actually thinks they are. One person alone may crumble, but a whole group of people will keep each other strong.
He needs to fix what he's broken. He needs to put these people back into jobs. They had no reason to be deprived from their money and to be pulled from their homes and to have to worry about getting by day to day.
Stop the lockout. Sign a petition to stop the lockout, AFL-CIO.org, end the lockout. Four people. Yeah. That's why you got unions, folks. You know, at least we get something.
I don't understand why he's locking them out.
Either. There's not much.
No information on that.
Not much. But, yeah, he obviously wants to break them. The whole idea.
Probably resents the fact that there's a union.
Yeah. America, let's get back to work.
This is by Edward Whitkind.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's on the economy.
As you probably don't have to look beyond your own community to see the visible signs of a crumbling and overcrowded transportation system. And you probably don't need to look further than your own family or close friends to find someone who is out of work. We we read something the other, last night. Was it less than about 30% unemployment?
Uh-huh. The two problems may seem separate from one another, but they're not. They share a common solution. If we invest in rebuilding our nation, we will also create new jobs that teach valuable skills and support the middle class. But this is not happening because too many in Washington are playing political games and turning a cold shoulder to the millions of Americans stuck in traffic and in a long unemployment line. Lowering the high unemployment rate and ending the brinksmanship that threatens our economy are at the center of our transportation labor agenda. With every mode of transportation suffering from neglect, it is hard to know where to start. Perhaps the place to start with is what rises to the surface, no pun intended. We need to confront the hard truth that the mechanism we use to fund public transit and highways, the Highway Trust Fund, is broken because the federal gas tax has been frozen for 20 years and isn't adjusted for inflation. The purchasing power of these funds has fallen 33% in 2 decades. We're trying to operate and build 2013 transit and highway networks on a 1993 budget. We need an increase in the gas tax that is indexed to inflation, and we should be open to other ideas to avoid what we're calling the mobility cliff. Well, in Connecticut, our gas is already really
high.
It's
the highest in the country.
I can't imagine what it would be
with another tax. With more people riding Amtrak than ever before, you would think politicians would be jumping over each other to expand passenger rail. But in a sure sign of dysfunction, this is yet to happen. As Congress considers a long-term plan for Amtrak, we are already seeing ideologues peddling through long disproven privatization schemes, GOP governors rejecting new funds for highways for high-speed trains, because it comes from President Obama, and even some in Congress debating how much Amtrak should charge for a cheeseburger. And a better way to run a railroad would be to make a more efficient, modernized Amtrak as the centerpiece of a national high-speed rail network. Absolutely, I agree with him on that.
Now, as we enter the shameful, avoidable sequester, instead of moving America forward, we're moving our country backwards. And we're scapegoating federal workers as they face furloughs and pay cuts. Both the failure to invest in infrastructure and the reckless sequester remind us that too much of Washington is tied up in pettiness and rigid ideology. Of course, as always, we have to multitask as we push for funding solutions to our transportation investment crisis. We face policy battles on many fronts. U.S. aviation workers are in harm's way as the European Union and its allies double down on a wrong-headed aviation trade liberalization agenda. Yes, the EU is at it again, making the case that America should gut its airline foreign ownership and control rules. We think the EU is dead wrong, and we will work against any aviation trade policy reforms that threaten U.S. airline jobs. Similarly, too many in Washington fail to understand the importance of a strong U.S. merchant marine and are chipping away at critical maritime laws such as cargo preference. Already in last year's surface transportation reauthorization, so-called MAP 21, some politicians slipped in a change in law that reduces from 75% to 50% the amount of the U.S. government-generated food aid cargo that must travel on U.S. flagships crewed by Americans. And our government still doesn't uniformly enforce the laws already in effect. We're committed to fixing these problems and protecting middle-class maritime jobs.
The time for speeches has come and gone. Washington needs to take a time out from politicking and start worrying about not letting this become a generation that lets our economy be defined by failing transit and rail system, deteriorating highways and bridges, and aging and capacities-constrained aviation system. A port maritime infrastructure losing the race is to be the world's gateway for trade and stubbornly long unemployment lines. We are fast becoming that generation.
The agenda we have rolled out focuses on investing in America, protecting and creating transportation jobs, and making sure our government protects strategically important industries like aviation and maritime from perverse trade policies and from weak enforcement of the laws already on our books. America needs to get back to work.
Very good. And, okay, we're going to go back. There you go. And, hang on one second here. This one. Yeah, no, it's
oh, there it is.
Okay. This has been an issue for some time, and of course a long time, but more so for some reason lately in the news media, and probably thanks to the unions and so on that are pushing for it. It's finally breaking mainstream news, because I've seen a lot about it lately. In 2000, it says the wage gap widens for women. And I don't have Lila read this very effective, but it's not very long. But I'll just say, in 2012, the pay gap between women's and men's median weekly full-time earnings increased from 2011, reported in the Institute for Women's Policy Research. IWPR reports, women's earnings may have been hurt by budget cutbacks and the loss of public sector jobs at the local and state levels. These are often medium and higher skilled jobs with smaller wage gaps than lower paying industries such as retail and hospitality, which saw strong growth in 2012. Job growth
in retail and hospitality, while welcome, often involves low paid jobs. You know, that'd be like waitresses,
yeah, sure.
And, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Sales girls, said Dr. Heidi Hartman, president of IWPR. Women are more likely than men to work in minimum wage jobs, and the stalling minimum wage increases disproportionately affects their earnings.
Yep. And so that's what's going on. So I just wanted to bring that up because it's definitely in the news lately, and you're going to hear a lot more about that. Little bit of time here for some reason. You get from page to page tonight. I'm supposed to have high speed internet.
It doesn't look like it.
But I don't know why. It's very,
certainly pay for it.
Yeah. You can then well it down. Let me just write that. Okay, hang on a second.
New report alleges widespread human abuse rights and temporary worker recruitment system. We read that.
We just read that. I just want to go down here and hang on. I'm back on the first page, but for some reason, this thing. I apologize, folks, because it's just.
You gotta wait.
Ridiculous. Oh, this one. I thought this was interesting, and let me just see if there's anything.
Let's read the one on Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, we can go back down. Where's that? Oh.
Reading list. Medicare and Medicaid spending fall underscores flaws in the Ryan GOP budget.
Yeah, this is sad because Ryan is such a dirtbag.
Oh, what a horrible person.
What a dirtbag. Just like unbelievable dirtbag.
Just
heartless,
oh.
Miserable, cruel son of a bee.
Probably mainlining from the Koch family.
Oh, he is. No,
yeah.
But yeah, he's one of Koch's major,
yeah.
Major.
Mainlining,
yeah,
I call that.
Mainline, yeah.
Yeah, right in the pocket.
Intravenous.
Yeah, right in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is by Jackie Tora. For today's health care, let's see. CBO may have undershot Medicare's future deficit reduction by over $300 billion. Projected Medicaid spending has fallen by more than $200 billion. Meanwhile, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, a Republican from Wisconsin, and the Republican leadership are demanding outrageously lower tax rates for Wall Street and the wealthiest 2%. and they want to pay for them by voucherizing Medicare, giving seniors essentially coupons, cutting Medicaid benefits, increasing Medicare premiums for middle-income beneficiaries. In other words, there'll be a means test to see how much you make, and essential services that working people depend on. Oh.
Isn't that frightening? Isn't that really frightening?
But they're going to lower the tax rate for the wealthiest 2%.
Yeah. That's god-awful, disgusting.
Greedy bastard.
Yeah. That's that, it's back. The Ryan GOP budget that gives seniors coupons to pay for health care and gut Medicaid and public investment and enriched millionaires and billionaires was once again proposed by the House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin today. Less than 6 months ago, voters rejected the Ryan Romney agenda of more prosperity for the super wealthy at the expense of the rest of the economy of America's working families. Yet Ryan can't seem to resist this austerity plan, and at this time, the Ryan GOP budget is on steroids.
Ryan and the Republican leadership are demanding outrageously lower tax rates for Wall Street and the wealthiest 2%, and they want to pay for them by voucherizing Medicare, giving seniors essentially coupons, cutting Medicaid benefits, and increasing Medicare premiums for middle-income beneficiaries and essential services that working people depend on. The Ryan GOP budget would cut spending by $5.7 trillion, devastating programs like child nutrition, cancer research, transportation, and shrinking government to the size it was in the 1950s. The Ryan GOP budget would increase the tax subsidies for corporations that send jobs overseas, lower taxes for the wealthiest people, and lower the corporate income tax rate. The cuts in the GOP budget would slow down our economic growth and kill hundreds of thousands of jobs, just as our economy is trying to turn the corner. The same kind of austerity is what led to Europe's slow growth and shrinking economy. Instead of calling for the sensible repeal of the sequester, Ryan would double down on harmful cuts to the lifelines that build up the middle class. For Medicare, the Ryan GOP budget does nothing to address rising costs across the board. Rather, it ends Medicare as we know it and replaces it with coupons or vouchers, forcing seniors into inadequate private market to fend for themselves. Healthcare costs, not benefits, are the real culprit here. But the Ryan GOP budget does nothing to control health care costs. Instead, it simply asks seniors to pay more. Medicare leaves private plans in controlling costs and helps bring down health care costs for everyone. Medicare is the foundation of our health care system and is the most efficient program available to insure seniors.
It's incredible, you know. And just a quick statement by Richard Trumka,
the AFL-CIO president.
Our economy is still in a fragile state of recovery, and we've seen that the previous cuts to state and local services and jobs have prevented it from recovering faster. The last thing we need is more austerity that would cost jobs and stunt America's future. We reject these so-called balanced approaches that increase inequality and shift even more of the burden to those who can least afford it. We call for an immediate repeal of the across-the-board sequester cuts and urge lawmakers to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid from benefit cuts. Working families are calling on Congress to protect Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare and from benefit cuts. And you could go to raising the retirement age and chained CPI different sites or different articles you can go to, and repeal the sequester and close tax loopholes for corporations and the wealthiest 2%. So there you go, folks. That's what's going on there.
Let's play a little music break.
Do that,
and we'll move on to another site.
Yeah. So if that's okay with you folks, we'll go right there.
Right over there, please.
Yeah. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
So Leo, okay, there we are. Mexico.
and all the way through Alaska and into Russia, all the way up through Alaska over here, Hawaii. I mean, it's just everywhere, and this stuff is absolutely amazing. Can you imagine what it's doing? You know?
I don't even like to think about it.
Well, let me tell you. The world media, I wrote this myself here from, I don't know more. The second anniversary of Fukushima, the accident is not contained. What corporations and control media cause, I don't know more, March 12, 2013. I wrote this quick little bloopy when I posted this because I got so ticked off. It says, the world media believes no news is good news, and made-up news is much better than new real news, and white smoke is better than black smoke, and one pedophile in a red robe is better than all the other pedophiles in red robes. And every major network news anchor is eagerly watching and reporting on an old stovepipe chimney on the Sistine Chapel, and wondering which red robe pedophile will become pope by white smoke, instead of watching and reporting on three exploded nuclear reactors that have devastated the entire planet. What a complete and utter farce. Amen. That was my prayer. But anyway, this is what's a nightmare. The nuclear expert and Ari Gunderson said today that the containment vessel at Fukushima nuclear reactor has a large crack in it, and reactors 1, 2, and 3 all exploded. BBC reports today that there is reactor 4. They know very little about what's going on inside reactors 1, 2, and 3, and they don't really know what the state of the reactor core is. Large quantities of radiation are still leaking into the Pacific Ocean. The operators of the Fukushima plant say it is impossible to keep storing radioactive water in tanks, and TEPCO will need to intentionally dump it into the ocean. The area around Fukushima has become so contaminated that even the trees are radioactive, and Tokyo is almost as irradiated as Fukushima.
Wow.
Imagine that, huh? So that's what's going on, folks.
Pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. So, anyway. Well, I don't know if you're keeping up with the Palestinian news, but I got a little ditty here for you from Facebook. Hate douchebags. That's where I got this one from. But nevertheless, they posted an alert, something that was stated by Ariel Sharon's son, Gilead Sharon, in an op-ed in the Jerusalem Post. He says, we need to flatten entire neighborhoods in Gaza, flatten all of Gaza. The Americans didn't stop with Hiroshima. The Japanese weren't surrendering fast enough, so they hit Nagasaki too. And that's from Ariel Sharon's son, proud as he is to be Ariel Sharon, the genocider, personally responsible for over 1,000 deaths that he personally shot. Imagine that? Ariel Sharon actually shot that many. He was proud. He was thrilled that he did.
Unbelievable.
He counted them, how many he killed, personally killed.
Do you have an audio right now?
I'm trying to find one here. There was one. What I wanted to mention, though, I don't know if that's an audio or not. Anybody remember famous Scott Brown, the senator from Massachusetts, the guy who was a Playboy senator? Was he a Playboy centerfold or Bath? I don't know what he was. You remember him? Scott Brown, Lila.
No.
Scott Brown, come on, the Senator Scott Brown.
Oh, Senator,
Scott Brown.
I thought you were talking about a basketball. I was trying to think, what basketball player is? I don't know any
basketball player. No. Scott Brown, the great Scott Brown from Massachusetts.
Yes, he was defeated by Elizabeth Warren.
Nummy nuts, yeah.
Whom I just love.
Guess what he's doing now?
He's not being resurrected again, is he?
No, worse than that. He's going to work for Goldman Sachs as a lobbyist.
Yes,
oh my God. Well, anyway.
Well, he showed his true colors.
It says, during his nearly 3 years in the U.S. Senate, Scott Brown frequently came to the aid of the financial sector, watering down the Dodd-Frank bill and working to weaken it after its passage, and accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign cash from the industry. Now the man Forbes magazine called one of Wall Street's favorite congressmen will use those connections as counsel for Nixon Peabody, an international law and lobbying firm. The Boston Globe noted Monday that while Brown himself will not be a lobbyist, senators may not lobby their former colleagues for the first 2 years after leaving office under the Honest Leadership and Open Government Act of 2007. He will be leaning heavily on his Washington contacts to drum up business for the firm. The position will also allow him to begin cashing in on his contacts with the financial service industry, which he helped oversee in the Senate. Well, among the lobbying clients represented by Nixon Peabody, among the lobbying clients represented by Nixon Peabody is Goldman Sachs, the Wall Street behemoth, and working skirted with the Dodd-Frank rules, reportedly skirted with the Dodd-Frank rules. And Brown received $10,000 in tax contributions from Goldman Sachs and more than $100,000 in contributions from his employees. Well, Brown was also the deciding vote against the Disclose Act, which would have allowed voters to see which moneyed interests were funding secret political ads. Oh. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which reportedly received millions from Goldman Sachs, led the opposition to the bill. And last month, Brown joined Fox News Channel as a contributor. And in his first appearance in that capacity, he lamented that Congress is dysfunctional and extremely partisan, and promised to stay involved by being part of the election process back home and other elections throughout the country. Well, gee whiz, I mean, this guy is cashing in all over the place, eh? Huh?
Well, what do you think? Go ahead.
What?
You asked me something, but I didn't really hear what you asked me.
Oh. Well, I said, it doesn't matter. Anyway, too big to go to jail?
Haven't we heard that before?
And
or too big to fail?
$10 minimum wage, which is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And GOP budget, we just read about that. But let's go to Pelosi's backs the $10 minimum wage.
Well, if we don't back that, then we're going to have to...
Well, let's see what she says about this. I think it's interesting. Because it's definitely a need.
And this is by Travis Waldron. House Minority Leader...
Take Progress is the thing.
House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Thursday called on Republican House leadership to take up legislation recently introduced by Representative George Miller and Senator Tom Harkin that would raise the federal minimum wage above $10 an hour. Miller and Harkin announced the bill, which would set the minimum wage at $10.10 per hour and index it to inflation so it rises automatically thereafter this week. Pelosi cited recent stock gains that push markets to high record levels. As workers' incomes remain stagnant as her reason for backing the legislation. So the CEOs are making a huge amount of money, and they're still squeezing the workers.
Yeah, they're squeezing them, yeah. And
this week, we saw something quite remarkable, the stock market soaring to record heights. At the same time, we see productivity keeping pace, Pelosi told reporters in the Capitol. But we don't see income for America's middle class rising. In fact, it's been about the same since the end of the Clinton years. If we're going to honor the commitment to the middle class, she said, we have to reflect the intention in our public policy.
And raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, I would bring it in line with its historical borrowing power, which peaked in 1968. The indexing it to inflation would prevent Congress from having to repeatedly raise it to keep up with rising costs. The current wage would be $10.40 had it been indexed to 1968. Top Republicans are already signaled their opposition to any increase in minimum wage, and even though 65 Republicans currently serving in Congress voted for the last increase, which was signed into law by President George W. Bush in 2007. So, kind of interesting, but, you know, I definitely should be there. You don't want to read. Did you read this, Downer?
Which one?
Billionaire tells Americans to prepare for financial ruin.
It's scary. Well, I suppose we should read it.
Oh, okay.
Who's the billionaire? Which one?
I don't know. Yeah, I just saw this thing. Billionaires are dumping stocks. You wouldn't think they're dumping stocks yet.
No, you wouldn't think so.
With a market on the rise. But this is from Money News. Right? So, in a second, we'll go to that. And billionaires are dumping stocks. Economists knows why. Despite the 6.5 stock market rally over the last 3 months, a handful of billionaires are quietly dumping their American stocks and fast. Hey, you want to read that?
Sure.
You want to do that?
Yep.
Right here? Warren Buffett, who's
been put on my stronger glasses.
Okay. Warren Buffett, who's been a cheerleader for U.S. stocks for quite some time,
was
dumping shares
at
an alarming rate.
We read that a little while ago.
He recently complained. This is in February, actually.
Yeah, we read that.
Did we read this article before?
He complained of a disappointing performance.
So why are billionaires dumping their shares of U.S. companies?
I don't really
After
know.
All, the stock market is still in the midst of a historic rally. Real estate prices have finally leveled off. First time in 5 years are actually rising in many locations. Unemployment rate seems to have stabilized. It's very likely that these...
They talk about market corrections at this time.
Yeah. Investors are aware of specific research that points to a massive market correction at as much as 90%.
One person publishing this research is Robert Widmer, and esteemed economist and author of the New York Times best-selling book, Aftershock. Windermere gives proof for his dire predictions in this shocking interview.
This is more or less what this whole thing is more or less
Should we listen to
a
little bit of that?
It's more of a, it's a warning, and it's a legitimate warning, but it's also an ad for his company.
Oh,
so, yes, I won't go.
Who's his company? Is Widmer.
Widmer. Yeah. But I just thought I would mention that because I thought it was interesting that they were dumping them. So you may want to investigate that to see why. I find it kind of interesting that I have a difficult time right now with Paul Krugman. And even though he makes sense, you know, in a lot of
his personal handling of his personal finances makes you a little scared.
Yeah, he filed bankruptcy.
He went crazy buying stuff. He thought as an individual he could practice Keynesian finances.
He wound up going bankrupt and owing to over $3 million.
Had to sell his house
or
his apartment or whatever it is he had.
Just like, he lost his shirt.
He made a mess of his life, just a terrible mess.
So, but anyway, he has a point. I mean, he did get a Nobel Prize for his economics. But says your facts are false on Social Security. Now, this is interesting. I've seen him fight this, and I thought this was interesting. I saw him fight this on television the other day. I don't know if you did it.
No, I didn't.
And I
yes, I did. I saw him. He was talking about the state of the economy. He made a lot of sense. But I had a hard time believing him because of his own personal
problems. I know, it was difficult. And I'm saying that now, but he does talk about the solvency of the of Social Security. And to keep, that they shouldn't be trying to rape that. It says, Paul Krugman tells the GOP senator, your facts are false on Social Security. During a contentious panel on ABC this weekend, that's when I saw it, that's when we saw it. Or
I didn't see it.
ABC's This Week on Sunday, Senator Ron Johnson found himself at odds with his fellow panelists and with the facts about Social Security solvency. Johnson and fellow panelists, this is the one I saw him on, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had been discussing the long-term solvency of Social Security when Johnson made the claim that Social Security Trust Fund was a myth and that the revenue generated from the sale of securities to the federal government somehow should not count in calculating the program's fiscal health. Well, the Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman jumped in to point out that Johnson was unwilling to accept even the most basic facts over the Social Security is funded, the way Social Security is funded, all for the sake of a talking point.
Yep.
And Krugman said, "You said let's start with the facts, but we've just run around right. We've just run aground right there." And Johnson said, "Exactly my point. We have got to agree on the facts and figures." And Krugman says, "But your facts are false. Social Security has a dedicated revenue base. It had a trust fund based on that dedicated revenue base. You can't change the rules midstream and say, suddenly the trust fund doesn't count. It's important to realize the facts that are being brought out here are, in fact, not facts." Okay? And then the Social Security Trust Fund is solvent through 2038, and the program would almost certainly have long-term solvency were it not for the Republican-backed cap on payroll taxes for income above a certain level. And I'm just going to play this little, I think it's a short piece, but it's where they talk about that.
And no, the Republican leadership cannot dig in and say that we are done with revenue because we are not. We got $600 billion. The Speaker himself, in his proposal, in the grand bargain discussion they had with the President, had $1 trillion in revenue. And so there is another about $600 billion left that we can do in revenue.
Just a question. You said let's start with the facts, but we've just run aground right there, right?
We cannot agree on
my point. It made my point. We have got to agree on the facts.
But your facts are false.
So we have a problem.
They are not false.
The Social Security thing. Social Security has a dedicated revenue base. It has a trust fund based on that dedicated revenue base. You can't change the rules midstream and say, oh, suddenly
the trust fund doesn't count. Here's the problem with the trust fund. The federal government owns U.S. Treasury bonds. It's the same thing. Because if you have $20, you spend it. And by the way, that money's spent. It's gone. You write yourself a note for $20, stick it in your pocket and say, I got $20.
We've done.
You have a note that you have to sell in the open market. The trust fund is a fiction. It has no value.
If you want to think of Social Security as not just being part of the government, then there's no such thing as a Social Security problem. It's just part of the general budget. You cannot say on the one hand it's Social Security
and it's promised.
It doesn't matter. On the other hand, we're going to restrict it to only operating off it's important to realize that the facts that are being brought out here are in fact non-facts. And how do we go from here?
Facts. Well, as Pat Moynihan famously said, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. And we're going to start this chimeric negotiation from two sides that can't agree on the most basic thing.
We're going to have a lot more information on the table.
That was funny. I watched that interview actually on Sunday, and I thought it was interesting because, a number of years ago, we interviewed a guy named Andrew Gause. And Andrew Gause was the first man. He's an economist, and he's also a gold bug, and he's done very, very, very well since we talked to him. Since the gold went up about $600 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first man to clarify to me what the banking system was about, what our government was about, right? And he actually tried many times. He was hired by Congress to explain to Congress to teach Congress banking, basic economics. And he said they didn't have a clue what banking was and how it worked. And I was amazed, but the amazing thing is yes, see, Krugman understands the concept. The other Republicans don't seem to understand it at all. Except Cheney. Cheney was the only guy who admitted, he said, damn the deficits. They don't matter. Sparked early death by Lisa Garber, and you can go to Facebook. If you're on Facebook, citizens.action.network. And experts say that GM wheat, if ingested, could shut down certain genes, leading to premature death or risk. And I know because I'm allergic to wheat myself, but the GM wheat developed by the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization using public funds that are needed to turn off genes is engineered to turn off genes permanently. The organization intends to turn off wheat genes, however, could affect human and animal genes. Through ingestion, these molecules can enter human beings and potentially silence our genes. DNA matches in GM wheat in humans. The wheat genes intended to be silenced are known as SEI, and the sequence of which are classified as Cistro. The experts know that the SEI is the part of it matched the human GBE gene sequence, and the GBE dictates glycogen storage, without which the liver scars and causes death in children. And adults with malfunctioning GBE genes can experience cognitive impairment, paramedical quadriplegia, and peripheral neuropathy, and neurogenic bladder. And the findings are absolutely assured, insists Heinemann. There is no doubt that these matches exist. And it goes on a little bit to explain this, but we're at the end of our show. And I want to thank everybody who joined us. And tomorrow night we're going to, please join me, and we'll be discussing a few more things, and possibly discussing the Pope and whatever. But tomorrow we're
right to the end of the show anyway.
So good night, everybody.
And
have a wonderful night.
Have a good night, and thank good union thoughts.
good
night, folks.
Good union thoughts, yeah.
Talk to you next week.